This is a No Dogma podcast. I'm Brian Hogan. This is part two of a long conversation with Ben Day, a plural site author, coach, trainer, developer for hire, available at www.benday.com. The first podcast we made, or first podcast released, was primarily about Agile. The conversation ran over. We had intended to have this second part all in the one and couldn't make it fit for time. So welcome back, Ben. And we're going to talk immediately about DevOps in the Microsoft world.
So yeah.
Please just give a quick summary of that.
Well, the DevOps in the Microsoft world will solve all your problems and make everything wonderful. So at the end, there you go.
All right, thanks. We're done.
Yeah, all right, we're done. Good night. The idea with DevOps is shortening feedback cycles. Like, how do you get from developer check-in to done working software that's delivered and usable in the shortest amount of time possible so that you can get feedback on it and improve it and do it again. Now, the way that I think of DevOps plus the tooling that comes from Microsoft or the tooling that comes from other companies is that it's really kind of the last mile problem. So Agile and Scrum have been around for 15, 20 years, and they've gotten us really good at getting ready to deliver, getting us to the done working software point. But the problem is that it kind of ends there, and then it's like, okay, well, there's all this stuff of taking what the teams have delivered and then putting it on servers. And how do you unify that whole process? That stuff has been missing for forever. So this whole DevOps movement is kind of like closing that last mile and getting it so that you can, so that it's not a separate development and deployment. It's really one long continuous thing.
I've heard of DevOps probably 2 to 2.5 years ago, and I've had a few podcasts on it. One with Grant Fritchie on database DevOps and a couple of others with other people. Everyone seems to have their own sort of definition of what DevOps is. And given that you are doing a plural site course on it, do you have a definition of DevOps?
It's really hard to pin down.
Yeah. Like, everyone's been different so far.
Actually, the very first module in the course is like, what's DevOps and why do I care? I had a really hard time saying what DevOps is. I can kind of define everything that's around it, but it's like DevOps itself has a cloaking device on it so that you can't see DevOps if you're looking at it directly.
No, it's one of those.
I really think it's more of a mindset of how do we get developers working with ops people so that you can go fully end-to-end in delivering done working software. Like one of my friends, David Starr, he's another Pluralsight author. He had a way of describing it, which was like, he had three questions. Like, how long does it take from a developer check-in to when it makes it onto a server? What are the steps that have to happen to get it onto the server? And then what percentage of your time are you spending with production support issues? And that's kind of like the three questions you can use to get going, to ask yourself, how good are we at DevOps and how good are we at actually achieving the goals of DevOps? But back to your original question, like, I really struggle with how to define DevOps itself. It's a mindset that tries to smooth out software delivery.
Because we've done without DevOps for a long time. So if companies getting by without DevOps, and it's hard to say what DevOps is.
Well, were they really getting by without it, or were they just really crappy at it?
Well, software gets out there. So, you know,
it's a new term, but it's stuff that we've had to do anyway. It's just that we're trying to make people automate it.
But so this is one of those things that I find difficult to kind of pin down. In the past, we had massive projects that worked, but people said they were crap because they were waterfall and we needed Agile. And if you want to know more about Agile, listen to the previous podcast with Ben.
Yeah.
But software did work. And despite what the manifesto people might have said, it used to get released, it used to work, and it used to make money.
Yeah.
So we didn't have DevOps. We used to be able to release code. It used to work, and we used to make money. So why do we need DevOps now?
Well, and to sort of extend your question a little bit more, like, you don't have to be Agile or you don't have to use Scrum to deliver done working software either. Like, there's 50 years of history Like, we went to the freaking moon without Scrum.
Yeah. And back, mostly.
And back, yeah, right. Importantly, we made it back.
Even in Apollo 13.
Yeah, minor details. It's not critical, but if you want to get really good and you want to go fast with how you're doing your software development and get really efficient with how you're doing software delivery, then yeah, then you care about this stuff. It's really taking a good hard look at what your steps are for how you actually get stuff delivered, and then looking for opportunities to improve it, automate it, eliminate waste. And I think actually sort of tying DevOps back to Agile and Scrum, a lot of it is looking for constraints in your process and, you know, where are we asking our teams to multitask? Where are we distracting them? What are our bottlenecks for how we actually get stuff out the door? Really trying to look holistically at how you get software out.
In one of my previous podcasts, we discussed who does the role of DevOps. Is it a dev person that takes on some of this task? Is it an ops person that kind of learns as a dev? And what seemed to be the best scenario from what this guest was saying was it needs to be a dedicated person whose job is DevOps. And you can't expect them to be also a developer because, well, they're not going to be able to dedicate themselves to DevOps. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. Let me say back how I think I understand that assertion. So, yeah, you're ultimately going to have a very few number of people that are going to own that flow. And ultimately, it's going to be a bunch of automation. And like someone's going to be saying, well, here are the places that we can make things better, looking for bottlenecks or whatnot. Someone's going to be automating that stuff. But I think that what is probably more likely in the grand scheme of things is that the team and the organization is going to be probably coming up with a backlog of DevOps-y things they want to achieve that they will then say, all right, DevOps lead on this team, go work on this. Like, figure out how we get the core of our automated testing done. Help us with automated build. Help us with release flows. Help us with virtual machine environment setup, all that kind of stuff. One of the things that I've found over time is that when Scrum teams get really good at delivering, at some point they start to notice that the technical stuff really is holding them back, and they want to start working on automation so that they don't have to do the same BS again and again and again. So at some point it becomes the team is demanding certain things happening in DevOps, but then one person is probably going to be coding it up.
You mentioned quite a few things there, automated deployments, automated building, automated testing. I know I've been to a few DevOps talks and I've heard of wonderful systems that some companies are doing, like I think it was Constant Contact, and I had one of their engineers on, Igor Muchnik, and he told me about their beautiful pipeline and how they can get an artifact out the door from a piece of code, and it's wonderful.
Yep.
But they're not doing Microsoft. So to come to your Pluralsight course, you're talking about this in the Microsoft world. So what are the tools we have as Visual Studio C# developers?
Well, the great thing about where Microsoft is at now is that Team Foundation Server is super cross-platform. So you can do all this stuff, Android, Linux, Mac OS, Windows, WinForms, .NET applications, ASP.NET. Whatever you want to do, you can do that now because TFS, the build agents and the release agents all work on different platforms. And TFS is a version control repository. You can use Git or TFVC. It's either of those are totally happy taking any source code that you have. So in Team Foundation Server, their DevOps solution is really just TFS at the core, and then some kind of automated build system. Out of the box, it's TFS build and TFS release management. But then you've also got plugins for, I'm blanking on what you can connect with, but there's all these other things that you can connect that are like popular, like Jenkins and Gradle and all these kind of things that plug into their stuff. It's very cross-plat.
Yeah, I've seen as well that on the NuGet side of things, it's quite easy to package something up and publish it to MyGet. MyGet is one of the popular NuGet repositories out there. They have all of those things, but I, as a developer, those things are not easy. You know, I mean, it's easy for us to sit here and say, oh, you just take this thing and you put it there and
right.
It happens. But
yeah.
When you actually start getting down to it, I couldn't figure out how to get my NuGet package built, packaged, and then published onto MyGet because the interface from Visual Studio VSTS wasn't particularly friendly or helpful. And then I just gave up after 20 minutes because I didn't have another 20 minutes I could spend on it.
Well, I'm kind of wondering if you were trying to do that with TFS build before TFS 2015.
No, it was about 3 months ago, I think.
Was it XAML builds or PowerShell?
I don't think so. I don't know.
If you weren't like neck deep in PowerShell, you were using the old build system, which sucked.
Oh, maybe I was.
So, maybe.
Okay.
Because now all the extension points are really just script calls. So if you can call it from PowerShell or command line, then you can call it.
Okay.
And you can pass variables around and pass arguments around, and it's really powerful stuff. And it's not that hard to learn once you get going.
So is it fair to say that let's just take the example. I've got a web API application sitting on my computer. I do a build locally. I do a test locally. It works. Is it possible to set up in VSTS a system where the checked-in code gets has automated tests run, maybe a code quality check, move to a QA integration test run, move to a release server and a smoke test? Is that all automatable now?
Yeah.
Oh.
It is.
That's so, news to me.
So one of the big things is separating build from release. So before, you only had build, and build customization was kind of hard. It's gotten a lot easier. But the problem with doing all that stuff from an automated build is it generally means that your build script is tied to one environment. So dev, QA, stage, prod, whatever. And you'd end up having four flavors of that. You don't really want to have that. You want to build it once, deploy it n times. So separating the build activities, and generally the way I think of it is that build is going to do my get latest, compile, run my unit tests, having no dependencies. So there's practically no setup and that my build runs really fast. Then my build gets the stuff ready that will be deployed. Then later on, release management comes through and picks it up. We'll have a release flow. Release has environments on it. And then each environment will have different configurations and maybe subtly different steps for how stuff gets deployed and what smoke tests actually execute. But you're kind of separating it into two parts in the Microsoft world now.
From a person organization perspective, does your DevOps person now attend your daily scrums? Are they involved in lots of meetings to kind of assist developers in what's changed or on how to change their own software build and deployment?
I really don't have prescriptive guidance on that one. But that's such a weaselly thing to say. it's a fancy way of it depends. I think that I would say that person is on the team. Mm-hmm. They are key to delivering done working software. So therefore their input is important, and they need to know what the rest of the team is doing, and the team needs to know what that person's doing. So yeah. But I don't know that I would say this is a full-time job. Like, once you've got your DevOps flow coded up, you're just making tweaks now and again. There's not a ton of maintenance on it.
I suppose that would somewhat depend on the size of your company too, because just to go back to the Igor Muchnik interview, with Constant Contact, huge company, releases every day and probably new products being built every couple of months. I think the approach they took was they had DevOps people who would go into a team, help them for a week, get them set up, not do the work for them, but guide them on how to do it and help them with the steps. But then once the team was able to do it, they'd be able to do it by themselves the next time. But that took sort of an expertise. I don't think it wouldn't have been smooth if a developer in team A did it and the developer in team B did it and C did it. They'd have all done it differently. This way, it was being guided by the expert DevOps guy team.
Yeah. I mean, you want to have consistency. When you're getting into a large organization with a lot of teams, like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 teams, you want to have someone that is keeping an eye out for the ultimate goal. I'm sort of thinking about a class that I teach called Scaled Professional Scrum, which is how do you use Scrum to scale up multiple teams to deliver something that is bigger than just one team. And one of the things that we talk about is this group called the Nexus Integration Team. And they are very focused on making sure that all those teams, let's just say 9 teams, are bringing together all their code and integrating every single day. And if they're not, they're going to start screaming. And one of the things that this Nexus Integration Team is obsessed with is the infrastructure for bringing this stuff together. So I can imagine that those people would be kind of the DevOps gurus that go and coach the team to go, you know, make sure that their stuff fits in with the overall DevOps framework.
One of the problems I imagine you face as well is inertia. People don't want to change.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised. The first time, there was a company I was at, I wanted to introduce Entity Framework and Web API and MVC, and I thought, this will be great. The other guys don't know it. You know, I'm not going to be super pushy about it, but you know, I'd like to show this and I'd like to teach them. And I got such pushback, I couldn't believe it. But I imagine now you're changing not just that. You know, I mean, fair enough. In the code sphere, a developer should be flexible. But now you're going in and you're changing maybe their source control. You said, we're going to use Git instead, and I have to learn all that. And Git can be tricky at times. And I have to change my whole process. I have to change everything.
Well, you don't have to change it to use Git if you don't want to. It's not required. But I know exactly what you mean. Like I think for DevOps to be really successful, you kind of need to have a good suite of automated tests, because that's how you're trying to like eliminate as much of the manual QA testing as you possibly can so that it's all automatable. And so that you could, like, you can't run your entire application through a manual QA suite 7 times a day. There's just no way. There's not enough time. If you can get that so that it's being done through automated tests, then yeah, you can do that 7 times a day and you always know when things are breaking. It's hard enough to get developers to write a freaking unit test. Like, I think that, you know, when we talked about Scrum a little while back, we were talking about sort of levels of goodness at Scrum, where like you don't necessarily start off being awesome. I think with DevOps, you're going to have levels of awesomeness. And in the beginning, maybe you get the automated build, automated deploy stuff working, but your automated test is garbage. Over time, hopefully teams would get better at doing all of it so that they're more efficient with the whole thing.
As a consultant and having gone into companies, have you gone into a company, and introduced DevOps for them and said, all right, this is what you should do? And then have you seen the results?
Well, the DevOps thing is a really new word, right? Like, I feel like it really just started hitting in the Microsoft world in the last year or so.
Okay, because I've been doing podcasts for 2 years on it, but I guess Microsoft is a little bit late with some things.
Or maybe you're just cooler than I am.
It was database DevOps, and it was scary DBA, so.
So this is stuff that I feel like I've been doing for 10 years, but it never had the term DevOps before. It's just kind of, I forgot what your question was.
I was asking if you've gone into a company, introduced this,
oh, right.
or recommended it, and then seen whether it worked.
Yes, it's kind of amazing. Like when you get in there, and then like just introducing a basic automated build is that's pretty DevOpsy. Like you don't have to get all the way end to end. If you can at least trim out, you know, some, if you can trim out 50% of the pain, that's getting you 50% closer to DevOps Nirvana. So if you get that automated build going, then every time someone checks in, you find out if your stuff is compiling, if it works, yada, yada, yada. You get that fast feedback on a team. That all by itself is, I've done that a whole bunch of times, and that definitely makes people's lives easier.
And developers come out happier, glowing.
I think that they just get they get used to it and they forget that it's there. So they don't generally jump up and down and go, yay, we've got automated build, or yay, we've got DevOps. It's more like, yay, we have more time to work on other stuff now. Like that's one of the big things in software development is that we spend so much time yak shaving. You ever heard of like, I want to do this, but I have to go shave the yak first? And you're like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, we spend so much time doing all this other stuff that's in our way, clearing out the brush before we can actually get down to delivering or working on the functionality we're supposed to do. DevOps is trying to minimize the amount of time we spend just doing stuff that doesn't really matter so that we can focus on the stuff that really does matter.
If I wanted to go down this route, let's say I watched your course, and I hope you'll tell me a little bit more about it. Are the Microsoft tools at a level of maturity, and are there enough of them to do all of the things that I would want, like have my automated builds, testing, deployment of my artifact, everything from the developer's computer to the release server?
Absolutely. Actually, that's part of what I cover in my Pluralsight class. So I've got a DevOps with TFS 2015 class coming up. Should be dropping anytime now. And I take you through doing a full end-to-end on that. So automated smoke tests across multiple environments, a continuous integration, continuous deployment model. So a developer checks in, that kicks off a build, that runs unit tests. If the build passes, that kicks off a release. The release automatically deploys and configures into a dev environment. If that works, then that triggers an email notification to someone saying, hey, can you go test this out and approve this before we move to the next environment? They click on a button, and then when they approve that release, it automatically goes and does the release on the next environment. So yeah, there's a full continuous deployment model in the Microsoft world right now.
And I know this might be a very subjective or difficult to answer question, but how long could it be if it was a very optimized system and not too big a release between me checking my code in and then it being on the release server, let's say ignoring a manual test?
So looking at the sample that I do in my course, I'm taking an ASP.NET application, deploying it onto a number of servers, deploying database updates to SQL Server, running some coded UI tests. The big question mark is how long your coded UI tests, your UI integration tests run. I don't know. It takes about 5 minutes for the whole end-to-end to run in my sample environment.
And that's including the release and the server needs to do to kick itself off again with the new code.
Yeah, yeah.
That's impressive.
I'm not doing containerization. So it's not like I'm using containers like Docker or something like that to completely bounce the web server. I actually, if I were using that, it'd probably be faster, honestly. But this is using virtual machines. So a web server, a database server, and then I have another server that I use for doing my automated tests. It takes like 5 minutes or so to run the automated build through the smoke test and through the deploy.
That's impressive. And with everyone moving towards microservices, it's quite likely that would be a realistic time because people are aiming to have much smaller applications with just a few controllers and the like.
Yeah. I mean, the idea with it is that you do a whole bunch of validation, and then the getting it on the server thing is actually, it's not that hard. But what you want to do is you want to make sure that you have automated validation to know that you can do that last 30-second X copy onto your servers and push the new version without bringing the whole company to its knees.
Just so listeners know, we recorded this in early September, so there's a very good chance that by the time I release it, the course will already be available. I'll put a link in, and I'll also put a link to Ben's home page plus his Pluralsight page. Ben, any final notes before we wrap up for today?
No, I think this has been a really fun time. Like, spend an hour or so chatting with you on this stuff. This is great.
Yeah, and by the hour, this is the second part of a long conversation, and I released one podcast on Scrum and Agile, and then this part was the continuation of that chat. Well, Ben Day, thank you so much for all your time today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
The opening music was Return by Nisi23 from the album 11 and 12, and the closing music was Below the Surface by Kyle Preston from the album Geo.